Well, I, with Eric's passing and the events for today and what the Leedy clan is going through among, you know, quite a big handful of others, I thought we'd talk about a time to encourage. And I'm going to read two of my favorite passages in the Bible. Let's go to Hebrews 10. Hebrews 10 and starting in verse 19 says, "Therefore, my friends, since we have confidence to enter the sanctuary by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain, that is, through his flesh, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us approach with a true heart in full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who has promised is faithful. And let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together as the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." So, you know, we know deep down that death, the grave, has been defeated. But yet we have to endure for the time being with death at times. And that's what the Leedys are doing right now, and some of us, you know, through the loss of Eric. The other one I wanted to read is 1 Thessalonians 4:13. First Thessalonians 4:13-18. "But we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about those who have died, so that you may not grieve as others do who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have died. For this we declare to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will by no means precede those who have died. For the Lord himself will cry with a cry of command, and with the archangel's call, and with the sound of God's trumpet, will descend from heaven, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up together with them in the with the Lord to meet the Lord in the air. And so shall we be with the Lord forever. Therefore, encourage one another with these words." So I wanted to talk about the situation of, I guess, the progression of grief. And when these circumstances hit us, we can call them trials, you know, bumps in the road, major catastrophes. We go through a process, and what is our opportunity in the situation right now when it comes to, say, the Leedys today? What they've went through, or when we know somebody that goes through a very traumatic event, and actually for the Leedys it's been events, you know, what can we do and how can we go about it? Back in 2000, in the year 2000, I became a member on a team for our sheriff's department called the Victim Support Team. We get called out as volunteers when there's a traumatic event and there's surviving victims. And usually death is, there's been a death. We get called out to a lot of suicides, DOAs, someone finds someone dead. And what our team does, we usually go out in twos. We'll spend that first hour to maybe 2 or 3 hours with the survivors who physically are okay, but now have just found out this horrific news. And a lot of times they're in such shock that in the moment they can't function. So we may help them make death notifications to their family, you know, make the phone calls because they can't even talk over the phone. We become almost like a direct liaison between the officers on the scene, because a lot of times it has to be treated not necessarily exactly like a crime scene, but for an officer, you know, where there's an unexpected death, they truly do have to rule out that there was foul play. And so they've got a job to do. And so our team allows them to keep doing their job. And if the family that we're with for the moment has some questions or anything like that, we now, I can go interrupt the officers or the deputies that are on scene. But at least now we don't have 10 family members trying to do it all the time. You know, we can kind of keep them, you know, over in a different area. And I got on the team because in 1998, the summer, I was a passenger in a vehicle that struck and killed a man while he was changing his tire along the highway. And I didn't get hurt. When I got out of the vehicle, I didn't even realize that we'd made contact with somebody or another vehicle. And I got out, and the driver that I was with said, "I wonder what happened to that man." I was like, "What are you talking about?" And I look back, and I see there's a car not too far behind us along the shoulder, and my friend is running towards that car. And I thought, okay, there's something's going on. And so I went back that direction also, and there's a body laying there in between our cars. And I get back to the other car, and the wife of an elderly gentleman is back at the trunk, which is open. And she asks me, she says, "Where did my husband go? He was just right here." And this is rush hour along the highway, and it took probably 10 to 15 minutes before emergency vehicles truly started showing up. And I was her caregiver for the moment. I didn't want to be there, but there was no one else to help her, and she wanted to go looking for her husband, and I had to keep her from doing that. And before the first officer got there, she started piecing together what might have happened, and she was fainting on me. And so she'd be standing up, and I'd be trying to divert her attention a little bit, and I could just see in her face she's about to go down, and I'd catch her. And we'd go down to the ground together, and after, you know, a minute or two, she'd come back around, and she'd want to stand back up. And finally, officers start showing up, and it just got really busy, and none of them came to her and I. What's going on? It was probably more than a half hour before a deputy finally come up to the two of us, and he asked me, he says, "So who are you?" I said, "I was a passenger in the car up ahead." He said, "Okay, give me a few more minutes. He says, "You're doing a great job. Keep doing it." And it took him about 10 more minutes, and he finally come back and says, "All right, you come with me." And our deputy took her. And they finally put me and my driver, or my friend, in the back of a car before we finally went back to the sheriff's department. Quite some time later, the sheriff's department was closed, and when we walked into the front door, the lobby area, it was dark. Nobody else was there. And we're walking through it towards another hallway, and I hear a noise off to my right, and I turned and look. And here's this lady sitting on a bench all by herself, weeping. And I literally grabbed the detective's arm and said, "You can't do that. Somebody needs to help her." And he said, "There's nothing anybody can do for right now. Her son's coming. He's on his way." And we left that lady sitting in that lobby by herself. I just thought that was the wrongest thing. That bothered me for years. And then in 2000, I saw a little tiny ad in our local newspaper, and it talked about this group. And the way it read, it was like, "I wonder if they do what I thought should have happened that day." So I called them up. She says, "That's exactly what we do." I said, "I'm all in." So I got on the team. I've really enjoyed it. It's not something for everybody. I've seen, the very first scene I was on was a suicide, and I had to help carry the body out of the ditch. And I'd never seen those sights before. But I've got to meet some pretty special people over time. But the other big thing that really caught me off guard, we went through, I think we had to go through 10 hours of training. And at the 10 hours of training, there might have been eight of us that went through that class. We all had the same question. It's like, wait, you never told us what to do when we were on a scene. And they said, no, we just kind of exposed to you what might happen at a scene, but they're all different. And you're just going to have to wing it. And I realized, okay, I had to wing it back that day alongside the highway. Whatever she needed for the moment, that's what I was going to do. And what I witnessed over time is the extreme shock that our body goes through, and we don't realize it, and others may not realize it, when you get that kind of news. Whether you're there and see it happen, or you just hear about it, our body goes into shock, and it's very extreme. I have met people in the store weeks or months later. They have no clue that I was with them in that moment for a couple of hours. Their mind just doesn't go back to that time and that place. Right now, Jeff and Sharon are in that stage. It's been about a week, but they're very traumatized, not just from the death of their son, but they come back home to a major theft at their house. They're home for about an hour or two, and they heard some funny noises. A family of raccoons had moved into their attic. You know, it's just kind of one thing on another, and you know, for Jeff and some of the other leadies, you know, Jeff lost his grandfather, who was 100, and I believe he was 102. Does that sound right? You remember? Back here, I think about 6, maybe 8 weeks ago. And I'm sure Jeff has not had time to grieve over the loss of his grandfather yet. But that's probably actually still coming. Now, his grandfather passing wasn't necessarily a big surprise, but certainly sad. And then, you know, Jeff's brother, John, and his wife, Beth, lost their son, Kyle, to brain cancer just a couple of weeks before Eric. And how do you put all of this together in your mind? So I got to spend a little bit of time with Jeff and Sharon this week. And it was last night, they were there and the girls were there. What do we do today for them? You know, what can we say? Well, for the moment, probably not a whole lot. It's not the time for a longer speech. You know what I mean? We want to comfort them with some of these words that I just read. And it's not that that's necessarily wrong, but quite honestly, right now, they probably can't hear it and wrap their heads around, you know, the deeper thoughts and what they really need for just this moment until they get past this initial shock stage is they need someone to listen to them, because they'll share a little bit with each of us. For us to simply go up to them and acknowledge, I understand that you're going through the worst situation you've ever been in. You know, just simple sympathy. That goes a long way with them right now. And here in the coming weeks, this initial shock is going to wear off, and the true grief and mourning is going to move in. And, you know, and there's a difference between grief and mourning. Mourning is what you do internally when you have loss in your life. That's how you cope internally, is your mourning. Grief is what you show outwardly during that same process. And you're going to see them or others go through, you know, these different stages or effects of grief and mourning. Mourning might be someone just needs a few minutes by themselves. it's not that they want to be forever by themselves, but they may say, no, it's too much right now. I just need to be alone. And that's okay. Part of grief is, though, it'd be actually be helpful for them to talk it out. And it may not be today. The shock value may be too hard. But talking it out helps huge, because our minds want to play things in ways that wasn't 100% accurate. We think we saw something. We thought we witnessed something in a way it did, but it wasn't. We only see it from one's perspective. And when we start talking about, all of a sudden there might be another memory click that comes into play. One of the calls I went on to here several years ago was on the 4th of July during the day. Three teenage boys, 16, 17, I think one was 18, got into two different vehicles. They were running from town at one of the boys' house out to another boy's house out in the country. And the two vehicles were kind of racing. They weren't going huge over the speed limit, but they were seeing who could get there quicker. And because it was out in the country, there's more than one way to go. They took two different routes. They T-boned each other at an intersection, rolled to one vehicle, it caught fire, and the boy was trapped inside and burnt to death. The driver of the other car got out and tried saving his friend who was in the burning truck and tried everything he could and just couldn't. About 3 weeks later, I got a call from one of the dads and said, would you come talk to the boys again? Because they knew I was out at the scene. I said, yeah, I'd be glad to. And so we sat down, and I asked them what was going on. They said, we just can't wrap our heads around what happened. We feel guilty. And I said, all right, so have the three of you talked about it? Well, no, not really. I said, all right, let's do this. I want each of you to tell exactly what you saw and witnessed and experienced, during that about a half hour's time. And they did. They went down the line, and the boy who was in the back seat of the one car, he told his story. And the other boy goes, I didn't know that. I was mad at you. You didn't come help me get him out, try getting him out of the burning truck. He couldn't. He was trapped. So there's a boy in the front seat of a pickup truck, or of a like a Suburban, I think. There's another boy in the back seat of that Suburban. They hit their friend, who was in another vehicle by himself. The friend by himself was trapped and burned. The boy in the back seat couldn't get out. And he was feeling guilty because he couldn't get out. And the other driver thought, literally, he's just being neglectful. You didn't come help me. And as soon as they talked it out and saw all the different perspectives of what was going on, it came together like, oh, I had no clue. So talking through some of these things is huge. If that had never happened, that one driver would have been mad at what was his friend for the rest of his life for not helping save the other. And it wasn't accurate. By talking it out, they got to piece together what the true events were all the way around. So when we can encourage someone to just simply talk, would you like to talk about it? Or very gently, and again, this is probably weeks to months down the road, would you share me a little bit more what happened that day? Because I've heard third hand a little bit, but would you feel comfortable sharing just a little bit? Them just expressing to you what happened also helps with closure. Because another thing we see all the time is when someone loses a close relative, and especially if they weren't there, and it happened at quite a distance, your mind wants to say, no, they're not dead. No, they can't be dead. I just saw them this morning. They're fine. But to start talking, to phrase the word, well, he died in an accident. You know, to phrase that, to come out of this person's mouth, their mind now has to start dealing with the fact, okay, nope, they're actually gone. I haven't seen the body. I didn't witness the death. I don't have any real proof that they're dead other than someone told me. But now for them to actually start verbalizing that goes a long ways in starting the closure process, the accurate closure process. So right now, Jeff or Sharon, somebody in the very initial stages of grief, mourning, and shock, they just simply need sympathy. You know, show them that you care, that you love them, and that whenever they're ready, you'll be there for them. But then the biggest thing is follow up. Because today, the Leedys are going to have a couple hundred people around them. And there's going to be times when they actually get to laugh. 2 weeks from now, it's going to be just Jeff and Sharon in that big lonely house. So a phone call, a card, a letter, taking them a meal, that will be really beneficial. And especially as we again, keep that door open for contact, that means here over the next couple weeks or months, we have a door open that we can truly help encourage them and maybe get in, if need be, into the deeper matters of all of this and start worrying or dealing with their spiritual health, because it's been shaken. If you question that in any way, anybody that goes through this, your spiritual health gets shaken, period. And they are going to need encouragement, not just for physical and mental, but also for spiritual. I think I already mentioned, but don't be afraid earlier on to hear words like, I'm angry with God. Don't let that phrase scare you. They didn't say they don't want anything to do with God. They're just saying, right now, I'm still trying to process why God would allow this to happen. You know, let the anger phase go out. Sometimes you need to be around them. You know, they need somebody around them to help them stay safe through that phase. I've been through some people that can get pretty brutal, you know, during the anger side of this. Another huge thing is the secondary victims. So we know Jeff and Sharon are hurting right now. We know that Elise and Aaron are hurting. Elizabeth, Eric's wife, we know they're hurting. But it didn't dawn on me till last night when they're there. Here's Elizabeth's parents. They're up here for the memorial, and they're watching their daughter go through the worst event in their life. And we hate seeing our kids hurt. So they're hurting right now. They need encouragement. I wish I could think of their first names. I can't at the moment. So, you know, think about some of those people. I know, you know, Jonathan and Corbin and Jason and Josh are here today, you know, from out of state because Eric was a friend. But if you know, you know, Miles and Garrett Gonzalo, those guys were very close friends with Eric. They're really hurting right now. Elise and Aaron have spouses. And again, they're watching their wives go through this horrible event. And Eric was their friend also. But you see what I mean by secondary victims. It's not just Jeff and Sharon and the girls. You know, this spreads out, and we have the ability to encourage or to just show sympathy and love towards this much greater, you know, group of people as we come into them. Our goal isn't to fix anything, especially today, and probably never, but we can certainly encourage. One of the things we can say today or ask today, very gently, is there anything specific I can pray for? They might open up just a little bit and share something with you from them about themselves personally about all of this. But more than likely, Jeff and Sharon may say, I'm really worried about the girls. Or I'm worried about Elizabeth. Erin, their oldest daughter, is due 6 days from now. As she said it last night, she says, I'm as pregnant as you can get. So she's got a set of circumstances there, and this family is going to be welcoming in another grandchild here in a few days, going through another birth process. And next weekend, they have to go through another memorial for Kyle. This just kind of keeps going for them. And that's the reason, I want to really impress upon all of us that we can't neglect 2 weeks or 2 months from now. That's when they're really going to need some help. The last thing I want to touch upon is when these events come along and we're not the primary victims, or maybe even close secondary victims, we need to prepare, because events like this are going to come into our lives. And it's not just death. Tom and Barb right now are out of their house. I've went to a handful of house fires where people have lost everything. And you know what they want? They want their chair, they want their blanket, they want their pillow. They want their comfort space, because all of that's been taken away from. I just want to go someplace where I'm comfortable and decompress. And now they don't have that space. They have to go to a new space that they've never settled into before, made comfortable for themselves. And so one of the things I learned very early on, when I'm called to a fire, I go buy blankets and pillows and say, this is yours. You don't have to share it with anybody else. This is yours. I can't buy them a Lazy Boy. But that's huge. And same thing with the kids. They've lost all their toys and things like that. Through the sheriff's department, things like that, we always have a bag of teddy bears and things like that to give out. But it's huge to just give somebody an item they can call their own when they've lost it all. But we have to be prepared, because each one of us are going to go through something that feels horrendous to us. And is our faith really going to be shaken? Those verses we just read, do we truly believe them? Do we internalize them? Is Christ coming back to save me? Did he truly walk out of that grave so that he can raise me out of a grave? In James 1, verse 2, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it nothing but joy, because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Testing our faith, why do we need testing of our faith? And what does that word testing really mean? Well, it can have two different connotations based upon society. I can walk up to you, I can just test you, and test you, and test you. But that's mean, isn't it? There's nothing loving or caring about that. When God wrote this word, he meant something totally different. I've been watching you, Corbin. You're ready for the next level. You have to pass the test before you can go to the next level. But I know you're ready for it. Here's the test. And it's not a test that I know is too hard for you. Take the test. That's what that scripture means. He's saying, I've been watching you. You're ready for the next level. This isn't necessarily going to be an easy test, but I know you're ready for it. And when you get through it, what you're going to be able to share with others and how your faith grows to the next level is going to be huge. Verse 4, and let endurance have its full effect, so that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. If any of you is lacking in wisdom, ask God, who gives to all generously and ungrudgingly, and it will be given to you. But ask in faith, never doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For the doubter, being double-minded and unstable in every way, must not expect anything from the Lord. Jeremiah 29:11. He says, for surely I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. Plans for your welfare and not for harm. Excuse me. To give you a future with hope. That's his plans for us. It's Satan that wants to see us fail the test, that will distract us from the test, try taking away some of our strength, our courage. God has a future for us that is filled with love and mercy. He gives the strength. So I did want to ask one question. Is there anything that, in a time when you needed encouragement, is there anything that someone said to you or did for you that really stuck out in your mind that you'd like to share? Yeah, Barb?
Yeah, I just go back to the ladies and everything and what they're all going through right now. When my mom passed away, my mom and dad was married 65 years. And my dad planted a seed. And I've tried to follow this since then. He said the first week, everybody was there for him, neighbors, relation and everything. He says it came the second week when it really hit him. Nobody was there, except, just immediate family. So I try to keep in contact. I've been keeping in contact with Mary Leedy since Kyle died and now Eric and everything. And just calling her and say, is there anything I can do? I'm sending a hug. It does mean a lot.
I wanted to share one other thing. We were talking about the faith aspect. So, maybe not all of you have met Aaron back here. Back in, March that you came for the first time? Somewhere in there? She came 1 week with her sons, and we got to meet her, and she stayed for the whole service. And I want to say, was it the very next weekend? It was. So she came one Sabbath. The next Sabbath, at 2:30 in the morning, my phone goes off, and it's the sheriff's department. And the COVID stuff had already started, and there's already things in place. And I didn't think our team was going to get called out for anything. That they'd just bypass this in a sense. And I get called out to an infant death. And when I get there, the mom of the infant is in the backyard, and her parents had just arrived. And they're trying to understand, get a feel for what really just happened. And they're trying to console each other. And the dad does something I've never witnessed before. He walks over to his daughter. He puts his hand on his shoulder. And he says, I know this may not be a time when you're ready to hear this, but I just want you to know God doesn't like this any more than we do. He's still with us. He cares for all of us right now. That really caught me off guard. Because here's this man who just lost a granddaughter. And he still wants God in his life. He still wants God in his family's life. He doesn't understand why this event just took place or what God's intention is with it, but he still wants God in his life. That was the second Sabbath. The third Sabbath, Aaron comes back in. And we start services, and I ask for intercessory prayer, and she raises her hand. She says, I'd like us to pray for my sister who just lost her baby. And as soon as she said it, the hair on my neck stood up. Because it's like, ooh, there's a big coincidence there. But she didn't give any details. And I'm going to pray for the situation, so I turned to Aaron. I said, would you share their names? That's where I was at the Sabbath before. I don't know what God's got going on there. But can anybody here tell me that God's not part of that? And Aaron's dad is a spiritual hero to me. That tells me what kind of stock that Aaron came from. Are we leaving that same legacy? When events don't go our way, are we going to want God right there, right then, right now? Knowing that he is going to make this better. As bad as this is right now, he is going to make this better. First Thessalonians 5, verse 9. I'm going to wrap up with this. For God has destined us not for wrath, but for obtaining salvation through the Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us so that whether we are awake or asleep, we may live with him. Therefore, encourage one another and build up each other, as indeed you are already doing. Anybody have any thoughts or comments you want to share? Yeah, Jason?
So my name is Jason, and I was a friend of Eric's. And I got to know Mr. Leedy by I was engaged. The engagement didn't work out, and through that, I kind of lost myself. And when I was going through that tough time, I reached out to Mr. Leedy because I knew that he had counseled and helped other people. And part of the reason that I'm here is not just Eric, but also my good friends, the Leedys. Kind of took me out of a low place where I didn't know where I was, didn't know who I was, didn't know why I was living. Anytime you have a big relationship and then you kind of have this direction and all of a sudden the direction bends. I've seen it with my friends that have lost babies. I've seen it with you just lose. And one of the things that you asked, what was something that somebody did for you? Jeff challenged me. He's like, you know what we need to do? We need to do we need to do some military training. We need to be able to do a plank for 5 minutes. And so Jeff and I trained, and he's like, I've got a much bigger belly than you, bud. And we trained in order to do a plank for 5 minutes. And we never got to the push-up level, but the planking, we both got to. And it's interesting, you know, I talked with him, like, I think it was at least once a week for probably 4 or 5 months, and he was there. That solid commitment, that diverting attention for a little while, you know, let's train to be, you know, special ops kind of thing, you know. That commitment, that's the kind of stock that Eric came from, and I'm sure that's the stock that Jeff came from. That's the kind of friends that is hard to find, and I appreciate that about them. And I question myself a lot of times, am I being that kind of friend to my friends?
I think what I've gotten from Jeff too, same thing, is acknowledgement of pain and that things you go through, they don't necessarily go away next week, or maybe they never do. And just certain special people can receive that, and you know they do. And that's hard to find, and it's a blessing when you do. And that's the kind of person that I endeavor to be.
Thank you, Aaron, for sharing that. It's quite, I always look at people that can take accident scenes and stuff. It's that's a special quality. But I got just a little one here, quick. I had DUI like 8 years ago and really was traumatized, kind of. Didn't know where I was going. But I changed my life and I changed a lot of things. But about a few days later, it was Passover, and I was in charge of the foot washing. And it was really a struggle. It was just something that said it fit the thing, because it really humbled me and stuff. But and I expressed it a little bit, but not too many people. But right after that, a few days later, got a card in the mail, and I got it to this day. Of course, I keep these things, and I read it the other day, and it was from Barb. And what she said in that card was very special to me, and I thanked her for it, but not in a while. But I just read it the other day, and I do really thank you for it. You kept my faith in God again, and not that I doubted it, but you always wonder why you go through these kind of things, you know. But I do appreciate stuff like that, and it's very meaningful. Thank you, Barb.
No, and that's for Mike. You know, I mentioned here a couple weeks ago, this is our opportunity to pray to God. Before we go out there today, Father, is there an opportunity that you want me to be a part of today? Is there somebody out you want me to talk to? You know, open my eyes to it. If there's something I should say, open my mouth to it. Let me hear your Holy Spirit working in me. But the same thing, again, I want to really harp on it. You know, today is one thing, but 2 weeks, 2 months from now is a whole new level for them, and where our opportunities are as far as showing them love and encouragement.
Just to let everybody know, too, that when people go through things like this, there'll be stages that they'll be going through. And anyone that does have history with a family, with a son, you'll know the time. But if you have that history, don't be afraid to reminisce, because that helps a whole lot. They'll be going through things that when they're home, they'll think of the last time this happened, he was alive. I mean, it's just phases that you'll be going through. But I encourage everybody, don't be afraid to reminisce, you know, thinking, I don't want to bring that up and bring, you know, this, you know, pick at the scab because it's healing and stuff. It's actually helpful.
No, today that's a really good point, because that's one thing that caught me off guard, you know, sitting with these individuals who have just lost someone dear to them, and literally in that first hour, all of a sudden the conversation goes to, well, they did this, and they used to do this. Oh, they'd say it this way. And before you know it, there's laughter in that very first hour because of reminiscing and memories. So today is an awesome day for memories. Don't be afraid to share your memories, you know, about Jeff. You know, it doesn't have to be directed about Eric. You know, I've got kind of the same story, me and Lori do. When Forrest was born, he was a day old, and we thought we were going to lose him. He got injected with a shot, and we truly thought we were going to lose him. So did the medical staff. The nurses and the doctors got really concerned, and you can tell when they're concerned. And we called up Jeff and Sharon. They came up to the hospital room. They stayed for 5 or 6 hours praying with us, you know, crying with us, you know, doing anything that needed to be done in the moment to get us through that. And just like Jason said, their phone was open for a lot of years for a lot of people. And so we can do the same for them now as time goes on. Anybody else? You got something, Brooks? Okay, then talk loud so everybody can hear you. You did. Will you go home and do it right away? Okay, all right. I think your fish will be all right. And hopefully won't hold a grudge. All right, Tina, you got something?
When Ed had died, my whole family turned against me, Satan. My daughters, my dad, everybody, and Frank was my friend, Ed's friend, prior to his death, and I would not have got through it. I truly don't think I would be here today. I know I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Frank. And we ended up getting married, and I'm happy about that.
Any others? Well, it's getting close to 12:30. We're going to close up with one more song. I'm going to have to run real quick. Lori's going to stay a little bit longer to kind of shut some things down. I need to get over and set a few pieces up over there. Any other thoughts or questions? Next week we'll be back. Brooks, are you listening? Next week, 2 p.m. You can sleep in late again next week, okay? All right. But don't forget to feed your fish. All right. Thanks, everybody. Then, Josh, can I ask you to close out after Jonathan's through?